I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Sonora, California. We're here to discover and explore the Sierra Repertory Theater.
I'm Scott Veets. I'm the executive producer at SRT, and I'm celebrating my 22nd year with the company.
My name is Jerry Lee. I'm the artistic director of Sierra Rep. This is my second season with the company in this position.
How did you come to be here?
As a guest choreographer, Sierra Rep is known for bringing in guest artists from all over the country. And I had a friend who was the artistic director at the time, and they needed someone to stage the musical numbers and dances for State Fair. It was a very large musical, a cast of almost 38 on that stage. So I came out here not knowing anything about Sonora, Tuolumne County,
Where did you come from?
San Diego. And I was working down there, and this was just another gig, and I fell in love with not only the county, but of course the theater.
And how about you?
I grew up in Roseville, a suburb of Sacramento, and I attended conservatory at PCPA in Santa Maria. From there, worked at the Oregon Cabaret Theater, and then immediately after that at Sierra Repertory Theater as a replacement actor in Guys and Dolls. I didn't come back for a few years, but in 2015, both Scott and I appeared in The Drowsy Chaperone at SRT, which we're reviving this year, and I've been around ever since.
How do you market and promote? How wide is your net for people that attend and support?
We bring in an audience of about 40,000 a year, and the bulk of our audience comes from the Valley, also locally, of course, and the Bay Area. The shows, I like to think, speak for themselves. Of course, we market, but our reputation, you know, we're celebrating our 45th anniversary this year. So we are pretty well known in the region for the quality of our shows. So the marketing is our shows themselves. You know, we do have a loyal audience. And the nature that we bring in so many guest artists from all over the country, from New York, Chicago, Florida, Los Angeles, our reputation within the theater industry is pretty high as well, because once an actor works here and they have good experience, they tell their friends, you want to work there. So it sells itself.
How do they sell it? What makes them fall in love? Why do they want to share?
Well, I think it's because we do present high quality theater, always with integrity. I think we're a kind company. We have a wonderful staff and very, very talented. People feel like they are taken care of as guests because, you know, they're coming to a town that they've never been to either. You know, you get a New Yorker, they don't drive or they don't have a car. So everyone's always a little nervous when they get here. But when they meet us, and again, when they're in their first day of rehearsal and they see that we have a very solid, talented team who are in charge of the show, everyone relaxes immediately and just focuses on doing the work.
Being in a, not necessarily a remote area, but being in a rural area, in a smaller community, I think we have to program shows that always are going to attract an audience. You know, we are adventurous inside of that programming, but not so much where we can present sometimes all the things that we want to do.
Tell us about curating shows. How do you decide what you're going to feature?
Curating shows and our programming is one of the most, if not the most, complex pieces of the puzzle. It informs our entire year, what audiences we think they're going to like, what we can afford to do, what's the cast size, which theater it's going to play at. We do operate two spaces. We're kind of unique as a theater of our size that we do have two theaters where we present full-blown main stage shows. We have the Fallon House in Columbia State Park, and then we have our East Sonora Theater. So it comes down to, how do you fill a whole year? We're a year-round company from January to December. What show's going to play at what theater? What time of year? You can't have two shows that are equally as big because we can't house everybody. And then it's down to really what we think people want to see and also what interests us. You know, we're also artists and we want things that will challenge us, but we also have to stay within budget and we also need attendance. So it's pretty much gazing into a crystal ball, trying not to repeat shows as much as possible, which can be difficult when you've been in the business for 45 years, and just seeing what we think we can do with, again, integrity and the best of our ability and be able to afford it.
Yeah, tourism is a huge part of that as well. It's a huge variable inside of our programming. Who do we anticipate is coming in the summer months and who is coming in the winter months and what could entice people to this area during those seasons? That's a huge factor in how we decide which plays and musicals and concerts that we'll present in a year.
What's your seating at each theater? And then looking back, what are the ones that touched your heart that you're most proud of that just went viral?
The East Sonora Theater seats 202. And the Fallon House in Columbia seats 250. What are some of the standout shows? That's tough. Yeah. Having been here as long as I have, the ones that stand out to me happen to be the ones I directed. You know, we're known for our major Broadway musicals, Broadway-style musicals, and I take great pride in almost all of them because those have their own challenges. But for me personally, and I think being very proud to bring to the community shows like Lynn Nottage's Intimate Apparel, or even The Glass Menagerie. We did Arthur Miller's All My Sons. Very, very complex pieces that don't have the, oh, I have to rush out and get that ticket because it's Jersey Boys or it's Les Mis, and all of that's great. But we did those shows beautifully, and we did have an audience for them and really touched people to introduce them to something that they've never really seen before or heard of, and to have it have an emotional impact is a great reward for me personally.
Do you do annual subscription and membership and lifetime followers?
Absolutely. We have a very loyal following and community. We do have a season ticket model that we've had since 1980, where you subscribe to, you know, all the shows and or half the season for a discounted price, mm-hmm. and the perks that go with that. But we also have a very, very healthy just kind of general admission. People just walking by and or seeing our ad and wanting to just buy a ticket.
Rush seat model used to be pretty popular.
Yes.
We still offer that.
Yes.
We offer a variety of discounts mm-hmm. to make theater accessible to our area mm-hmm. and to encourage new audience members to visit and join us and see the work that we do. And that includes a rush ticket option.
And we are very proud that we are affordable. You know, for a theater our size and for the quality of productions, we get many comments from people saying, oh, I saw that on Broadway, or I saw the tour and loved your production even more. And our prices are, you know, a quarter of what city prices are. So we always keep that in mind.
Part of that is the intimacy of our spaces. You're up close and personal with art. And like with Jersey Boys, the Fallon House is sometimes an optical illusion. There were times it felt like the four guys were literally standing on your laps. Oh, wow. That's how close you are to the art.
An interesting question, acoustics, because you're not in a purpose-built, modern, state-of-the-art building. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, yes, the Fallon House has its own challenges. It's over 150 years old, and it's a historic building. So it has to be preserved the way it was originally built, even though it's had several reincarnations when it burned down in the 1800s. But it's interesting, you know, those old theaters, and the Fallon specifically, they were built before amplification. So they were designed to have really actually wonderful acoustics. Sometimes the state-of-the-art theaters aren't built that way. It relies on, you know, the microphones and things like that.
It can be a drag for the actors sometimes when I'm sitting in the audience directing and I'm like, I can hear you whispering back there. This building is meant to amplify your sound. Don't talk backstage.
You really could do a show in that theater without microphones. Although when you have music and musicals, you know, people like it loud these days, too. People are used to that. But we still employ the old-fashioned technique, even if an actor is wearing a body mic, of what they call projection.
For me, a personal mission is the next generation, the kids, students. What sort of programs do you have in place for bringing school kids?
We changed our programming recently within the past 2 years to offer an earlier matinee time on Wednesdays to encourage student audiences to join us for certain shows throughout the season to fall within the school year. Several years ago, before the pandemic, we were noticing a trend that our local school audiences were no longer able to afford the trip to the theater. So we started a new program called SRT in Schools that brings professional theater to our local schools free of charge.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's modeled after a few different programs. I think we're maybe one of the only ones that offers it at no cost to the schools and to the students or their family. But the idea is that we bring four actors together and a stage manager, and they present a 45-minute play. The set, they travel to the schools from the theater with their set in the van. They set up and they perform for the entire student body. They can perform for, you know, certain grades. And it's always really encouraging before each of these performances when the stage manager addresses the student body and says, "Welcome, we're SRT in Schools. For how many of you is this the first time that you are seeing a play?" And so many students raise their hands. And that's always just the most thrilling part of that that venture. We also offer a workshop program called SRT Junior, and those are workshop productions that students can sign up for where they get the experience of putting on a play or a musical under our professional conditions. So rehearsals are treated like our professional rehearsals. They are treated like professional actors in every respect, except they don't get paid. But we just closed this past weekend a very successful, actually our most successful SRT Junior production of Mean Girls Junior. It was a very rewarding experience for all of our resident artists who are working on it, who admire our students so much and support them so much, and equally rewarding for these children who were over the moon to be able to perform under our conditions and for their families, and in a way that just elevates them so much.
And if I may, to Jerry's horn, SRT in Schools really came about when we were hearing back, why are the schools not coming? They can't get buses. That was a major, and I think still is, a major problem. Buses are very expensive. And so they started to cut, you know, that out. And so they weren't coming. And Jerry and I were talking, and Jerry said, "This just breaks my heart that there isn't an option for kids to come have a field trip and see theater." That's how we got involved in theater and how most people in theater get first exposure to the arts. And it was Jerry's mission to say, I want to remedy this. We're going to go to them then. And we raised money for a van. And again, Jerry formed this whole program. And it's now in its third year?
Yes. Actually, maybe it's fourth year. We got cut short because of 2020. But it started in 2019. We got one performance of Peter Rabbit in, and then we closed the theater the next morning.
After every performance, though, the teachers have the students write a little review of what their favorite parts were or what, you know, kind of impact it had on them. And they're just so fun and beautiful and funny sometimes, but they're also grateful for being exposed to this new entity that they didn't know. You know, they know television, they know movies, but to have an actor in front of you and telling a story, and they're really into it, you know. They also will draw all these pictures, and it's just so rewarding. And again, it's, I think, one of the proudest achievements of Sierra Rep in recent history is SRT in Schools.
Have you had any kids that have had their lives changed and have come to join you and to work on sets?
Well, with our SRT Junior program, absolutely. We have many, many kids who hadn't ever been on stage before. They get bitten by the bug by doing maybe a little junior version of something. And we have several who are now going off to college who have been with our program for all these years, and they have some of them graduated to working backstage as a crew member. We've had also many young performers who graduated from being in a junior program to our main stage. We did a Shakespeare Midsummer Night's Dream, and for the fairies, we had four children who made their main stage debut, and their parents will come to us and say, my gosh, my daughter is now going to college to study theater. And it all started with Sierra Rep. And that's a thrill.
It's really important to make these kinds of programs accessible because there are not so many options in our region because we're so far away from other cities. Mm-hmm. So we're very thankful to organizations like Mary Stuart Rogers Foundation, which is our education sponsor this year, John and June Rogers, and Sonora Area Foundation, who are both season sponsors this year.
And as a reminder, I know we've said it before, but the fact that SRT in schools, we don't charge a dime. It's all free of charge, and that's important for us. And with these sponsors, that allows us to be able to do that. They're giving a gift to us to be able to give a gift to the schools.
Follows that your net for schools would go down to the valley, maybe Modesto or Turlock.
Yes, we've been programming our tours to visit schools in Oakdale and Modesto, and hopefully further. I would love to expand this program and maybe even have two tours running at a time. It's also a way to support our guest artists who are coming in from out of town. It fills their plate more while they're here, and it fills that time between showtimes in a performance week. I did the track one day with one of our productions last year when we were doing the Odyssey, you know, for children, and went with them on a two-show day to one school in our area, and then was in the audience while they were performing in Elvis the Musical. It's a full day of theater. And for the young people who are coming here, they have the energy for that. They have the stamina for that. It's what I would have wished for when I was a younger man doing this, starting out, gaining that experience.
How did this happen for you, going back to when you were in junior high and high school? Did you have a clue you'd wind up doing this?
I visited with my class the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland. And over the course of one weekend, we saw Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and Noises Off, and Romeo and Juliet, and maybe Anthony and Cleopatra. I had never laughed or enjoyed a performance so much as their production of Noises Off. It was just hysterically funny and professional and beautiful, and I think that was the real moment that I realized that that existed, and that it really introduced me to the concept of a resident theater, a repertory theater. And that's kind of become my passion throughout the years, is being in a place that supports artists for a long time, hopefully for a season, where you can be, where all play all these different roles and have all these different responsibilities inside of a theater. And that's kind of my new mission in our programming, is how we can support actors for a whole season, or even half a season, but give them constant work and build up their resume and put them in shows and programs that they're really proud of.
Your artists make a living.
Yes, we're a professional theater company.
That's really
and
cool.
Yeah, everyone is paid. And we don't have our own, like, dormitory. We bring in, you know, about 90% of our ensemble, of our acting corps, comes from out of town, mostly from New York and from California, but really all over the country. And we rely on hosted housing. We rely on members of our community to open their homes and provide our traveling actors with a private bedroom and, you know, other facilities. But we don't have our own housing to offer yet. Hopefully someday. That's the big dream.
On our bucket list. Dream.
Well, I think there's kind of a default bonus to that model, in that you're embedding with community members and then they kind of grow your world.
Over the years, many, many relationships that have formed. Some housing hosts end up being like a family to these visiting actors. And even after the show is closed and they've moved back to their city of origin, they'll stay in touch. And I have even seen where even an actor who wasn't in a show will be asked to come back to have Thanksgiving dinner with that family. So there have been, yes, many, many relationships formed with the housing host model. It is a challenge, though, because it depends on, you know, we also belong to the Actors Equity Association, and there are certain rules about, you know, private bedroom, private bath, of course. Because we live in a county that has severe weather, sometimes a housing host can't house someone during the winter months. So it is a challenge, and we're always looking for people to help us with that. Of course, our dream would to augment that with our own apartment building or dormitory or something, and hopefully that's down the road, but that will take a lot of effort as well.
We have an incredibly supportive community.
Yes.
Around, well, just Sonora is incredibly supportive of, yeah, our organization. But when I started here, I kept saying to Scott, I can't believe this. I've never, ever seen a theater whose fans and volunteers and audience is so supportive of the art and so vocal and so actively supported. It's really, I think, quite singular and a testament to our work. I think Scott used the word kind. It's a testament to the kindness of the people who work here. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea that the theater is always, always encouraging people to join and, you know, be a part of our little family.
Mm-hmm. How common is it to have a repertory theater in a small town?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people make it happen. It really is just based on, you know, of course, community support, but people who are passionate about what they do, who make it happen. I would, you know, say that's what we do. We love theater. We believe in it so much, and we believe in supporting artists. It's really difficult sometimes, but we have to sometimes make miracles happen, and luckily they do.
We are unusual and a bit of a gem in the fact, as I mentioned before, even regionally speaking, we're a rarity that we operate year-round and that we operate two theaters simultaneously and have a thriving education program. So there's always something for everyone. It's always busy. We present 9 main stage shows in addition to then our children's programs. And that is unusual. And then having it in a community of our size is also very special. And as Jerry said, though, you know, this is a testament to our the founders of the theater. Back in 1979, you know, there were 5 people. I'm going to name them. They're David and Kathy Kahn and Doug Brennan and Sarah and Dennis Jones. And they all were involved in the drama program of UOP, University of the Pacific. And they performed at the Fallon House in Columbia. And they were building sets and costumes, and they'd stay up late at night and go, you know, gosh, we really love it here, but there's no theater. How can we, as artists, you know, present live, professional, quality theater and still be a part of this community and also not just be part of it, but have an impact, you know, and, you know, not only towards economy and arts and culture. Can we have it all? And they decided that 3 of them would quit their other jobs and focus on building the theater while the other 2 had full-time jobs to support them. They all lived in one house for at least a year or more. They did all of the legwork and homework, and within, I think, a year and a half, Sierra Rep was born and had its first opening in 1980. So it's really the foundation that they started, the legacy that they created. I worked with the founders, Dennis and Sarah Jones, for my first 15 years here. So I got firsthand knowledge of the history, and also working so closely with both of them was just a great training for me. And then when they retired and they passed the baton to me to be the producer, it was just a gift and also something I felt prepared for. And we haven't veered too far off the original model. We grow and we constantly change and stay contemporary, but that's what they wanted all along because they never stood still either. You know, they always grew with the times, and it just continues to flourish that way. So it all started with those founders.
How did the second venue come about?
So they opened with the East Sonora Theater, which was very different from what it is today. It was originally a tin beer warehouse. And they converted it, you know, tried to make it into a theater, but it was 99 seats, and the configuration was totally different from what it is today. It went through a renovation in the early 90s, where they expanded to its current 202 seats and pretty much the model we have today. The Fallon House in Columbia, which is where they all met and did their program, that was occupied for many, many years by a college, Columbia College. And they had many wonderful, successful drama programs that would present there. Around 1997, their contract expired and wasn't being renewed. And or there was a bidding for that, and Sierra Rep got it and then acquired the Fallon House as a second space. The theater was growing so much in the 202 seats that we had at East Sonora that it just was logical to how can we expand, because our audiences are filling this place up and the demand was such that they wanted more. So we acquired the Fallon House in 1997, and we've had it since. Again, being able to operate both spaces at the same time.
That's awesome.
Our season this year, we've opened with just extraordinarily funny play called The Play That Goes Wrong. A lot of companies are presenting this title right now. It's just hysterically funny. And we just started rehearsals this week for Little Shop of Horrors, which will open the Fallon House Theater at the very end of this month. After that, I'd mention that we're bringing back our production of The Drowsy Chaperone. And we're also bringing back a very successful production from several years ago that we'll put in the Fallon in the summer called Route 66, which is a jukebox musical of road songs traveling from Chicago all the way to California. After that, we're bringing Taylor Rodriguez back in Elvis, the Ultimate Tribute. He's an incredible Elvis performer. He starred in our production of Elvis the Musical. And our audience fell madly in love with him. He's just quite a guy. And then after that, we'll be presenting, the musical Hair at the Fallon House in the late summer, followed by Into the Woods, which is a favorite of a lot of theater artists, and quite a beautiful story by James Lapine and Stephen Sondheim. And then to close out the Fallon House, we'll be presenting Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And to close our season, we're bringing back a wonderful musical group called Americana Women, who'll be bringing us a brand new concert called Americana Christmas.
And when you ask if there are any secrets, I would just say, I don't want to be a secret anymore. For some reason, sometimes Sierra Rep, it's known to our audiences and to our actors, as we said, but there are often times people don't know we are here. You know, we get overshadowed by the magnificent Yosemite, and we have, you know, skiing and mountains and lakes and all these charm towns like Jamestown and Murphy's Sonora downtown. And then when people discover, oh, there is Broadway caliber talent at this theater, and it's done with such professional integrity, that's there. And then once people get here, then, you know, they come back. But, you know, there are many times I'll read travel magazines and there will be a section on Sonora and, you know, we're not mentioned. And so it's always like, oh, yeah, they're a secret theater, a hidden gem. And we would love to expose that secret and let everyone know that, yes, this county has so much to offer. In Visit Tuolumne County, they are wonderful at marketing not only us, but also, you know, everything that there is to offer here. But yeah, let it be known that there's fabulous theater in the foothills of the Sierra Nevadas, where the gold rush began, and there is gold at this there theater. So please look us up.
To learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
For more information about Sierra Repertory Theater, follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and to visit us online at sierrarep.org.
That's SIERARREP.org.
My name is Jerry Lee. I'm the artistic director of Sierra Rep.
And my name is Scott Veets, executive producer at Sierra Rep.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, your host, reporting from Sonora, California. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
World Bicycle Relief partners with communities to deliver specially designed, locally assembled, rugged bicycles for people in need. Nearly 1 billion people in rural regions of the world live in communities far from the nearest paved road, walking miles every day just to survive. Distance is a barrier to attending school, receiving health care, delivering goods to market, and other critical services needed to thrive. Find out how you can help deliver rugged, dependable, life-changing bicycles to deserving communities. Log on to worldbicyclerelief.org to learn more.